back to finish off our review of the Undercover album.
My favorite Stones album of all time.
In case you've forgotten, we're your hosts, Muddy and Waters.
Punky and Brewster.
The next song on the album is All the Way Down, which is one of my favorite songs on this album.
It's just great. So in the spirit of, you know, so often in all rock lyrics, there's a creative misread. Nowadays, you know, you get online and you look up the words to a song and someone's just done a voice to text, you know, holding it up. It's not even, you know, some of these, they're not even words, you know, it's terrible. And as we know, like often some of the words were some assistant later after everything was recorded and maybe the vocals were mixed down in the mix somewhere. I'm like, well, put your ear up to the speaker and write down as best you can. And that's what we'll publish as the words. So you never know for sure. And of course, our title is a reflection of this very right, phenomenon, yes. You know, but I had always heard this as she went all the way down.
And you're saying it's not.
Well, here's the thing, like, of course, there's we went all the way down, but when you listen to it on a really good set of speakers, Mick is saying she ran all the way down, but the backing vocals are saying went all the way down. So there's, I don't know, is this like quadruple reverse entendre?
Wow, yeah, I guess I never thought of it that way, but I always thought it was she went all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the story of his early, as a young man, encounters with the older woman, perhaps.
Well, there's plenty of going down in this song. That's what counts, really.
The beginning, it starts with Keith. I'm assuming it's Keith, just telling the engineer, like, well, don't start from the beginning. Just drop us in. We want to just something I think they thought was funny. Like, well, leave that in there.
Don't hear it from the beginning. Just drop us in.
And it worked out to be a really good song, a really strong song. But again, like, you know, we don't think about this, but this is there's some reflectiveness in this that as you get older, I'm like, yeah, I understand this now in a way I didn't when this came out. You know, how the years go on by, was it birthdays, kids, and suicides, and like, oh well, now that I've lived through all of those things, I'm like, right, this mood is, yeah, it's that.
Yeah, and Mick, I think, was just about to turn 40 or right about 40 at this time, which at the time was, you know, outrageous that someone was going to turn 40. Another thing he doesn't get credit for is being an adult at a young age. I think as far back as like 1970, when he's like, I was still in his 20s or whatever. They're like, how does it feel to be, you know, you're not the young kids on the block anymore. You're going to have to be, you know, you have this seniority and all this stuff. When you look at it now, it seems ridiculous.
Well, it's still ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because this is those boomers who thought or still think that they could be teenagers forever. And who would want that? You have spots the rest of your life. That's gross. Already Muddy, that generation that the Stones base themselves on, they were already swinging out in their 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s, as it turned out.
This is the B-side of Undercover, but I think this could have been a single, and I think it could have done well at the time. If I was the record company guy in 1983, 1984, Walter Yenikoff, was that his name?
I thought you were going to say Walter Peck.
If it's me and I'm talking about singles, Undercover the Night, you know that's Mick's baby. You know that's going to be the single, and it should have been. I think She Was Hot was the second one, which is a great song, but if I'm looking at it, like what I think is going to play to the charts in 1983, I think I would have picked this one. I think it's got the kind of vibe. There were other people doing this type of thing sound-wise and in terms of how the melody goes and things like that.
This is one of the songs I always say, in lesser hands, this would have been an Elvis Costello song.
Exactly.
And thank God it's the Stones.
Right, yeah. You know? But he would have had a hit with it.
But the Pretenders, this would have been the best song they ever made.
Right, and I think this would have went over well. The only thing I could find out was Ronnie in one of the books said, we didn't really explore it till it's... We didn't explore its full potential, and he thought it could have been a better song. So it makes me think, like, they did see something here and maybe just ran out of time and said, look, we gotta get this done.
That's the key thing. Just drop it in. Come on.
That's where that line comes from. But Ronnie saying that makes me wonder, like, how much he had a hand in it and maybe how much he was trying to press on it. It doesn't necessarily sound like a Ronnie song or a Keith song to me. It sounds like... Or even a Mick solo song. To me, it sounds like when every so often the Stones will do something that... They take whatever's kind of current and do their spin on it, and it works. I mean, Miss You is a good example. Can't You Hear Me Knockin' is probably a good example, because Carlos Santana and people like that were doing those kind of jammy songs around that time. Paint It Black is a good example. And I think this is a good example. It didn't get released as a single. People were, other artists had a sound doing this type of thing in 1983.
That was their career benchmark.
And the Stones are like, yeah, I'll do that.
we'll make it look easy.
We'll do it. Let's take a stab at this. In the 25x5 documentary, Mick talks about in their early days, like, well, of course we did Muddy Waters and, you know, Chuck Berry, but we also did Elvis and we did Buddy Holly And we did
Arthur Alexander.
Yeah, and he's like, we did everything in the whole, all of pop music. And he's like, and at that point, 1989, he's like, you know, I think we still do. And I think they were. I think this is a good example of that. Give me back that time right now. I can see it if I close my eyes. Every minute just a waste with every hour. A foolish chase. Well, it's time to close the album.
Wait, did we get It Must Be Hell?
Well, that's the last song.
Okay, is that where we are?
We're on, yeah, the last song on the album, on this journey, and we'll have a little more to talk about to close this out.
Musical journey.
But the journey that is the Undercover album, It Must Be Hell. The riff is a take on Soul Survivor.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's not, sometimes songs are reincarnated, sometimes they're revisiting a song and taking the direction they didn't take before. I think this might be just a direct reference by the subject matter, like, oh yeah.
Go back here to some social commentary. So we've gone into, I mean, I guess we didn't get away from that. A little bit more politically pointed, maybe. So we started with Undercover, which is very political. We've gotten into more social commentary, but maybe focused more on romance and relationships and things like Pretty Beat Up, Too Tough, All the Way Down. Too Much Blood is all about violence. Now we come back to this much more, and Mick does a lot of this on his solo albums. I think especially on Primitive Cool, there's one or two songs where he's really like Let's Work is the one I can think of offhand, which is just blatantly talking about, like, the world doesn't owe you, you need to get up, you need to do things. Here he makes references to starving children or overeating children, which in 1983 he was saying this, and strangely ahead of his time. Because this is a problem in, 2021.
Sure.
I never, in 1983, I don't remember anyone's problem being that they were overeating children.
Taking a lot of shots in a lot of directions in here. But I think the idea is, there are people in the world who have serious problems. You know, if you're thinking like, well, the problem is we need more TV preachers. Later in the 21st century, on Sweet Neocon, Mick will spell it all out for you, what he really thinks about all. Something I think doesn't get brought up enough about this. The solo on this song has the most incredible guitar tone that hasn't been seen before or since.
Yeah, it's very unique.
It's just happened this one time. It blows me away. Now, today, in 2021, it blows me away.
It's a very unique thing. I think Mick's singing on this, he starts off a little more mannered at the beginning. He gets into shouting a little bit later on, especially before the chorus is hit in. If anything, the chorus gets more melodic. It calms down. But then in the final act, I guess, of the song, and this kind of plays us out toward the end, it really changes structure completely. It's almost like a chanting thing toward the end of it, which I've heard this many times, but I still, every time I revisit this, like, I always never kind of expect it to go that way. I was expected to kind of end a different way, a little bit more
abruptly,
with the first part of the song kind of but then it just shifts gears, musical idea. But they do this later in things like on Bridges to Babylon. I think there's a couple key songs. How Can I Stop goes into a completely different thing. Or I guess you could say even with Can't You Hear Me Knockin', it's like two separate songs merged together. It's a great song. I don't know, of all the songs on the album, I think what other song could have ended the album?
Wow, when you say it that way, exactly.
I mean, just structure wise and with all the kind of worlds we've touched on with all the different songs, it makes sense that this one ends the album, and it makes sense that album ends it in the way that it does.
I wanted to say something about the 12-inch remixes.
Let's talk about that.
Extended mix. So this is something I haven't listened to since the day, but listening to the Undercover 12-inch, because this was done before non-linear editing, it really works.
Mm.
Everything on that it's an extension. So all the ideas in the song have a chance to stretch out. And you get an idea like where these parts were going. It's kind of like when you get a movie and they've put all the deleted scenes back in, like we just saw with Terminator 2. It's not this abrupt like, oh wait, we just chopped this and looped this or whatever. It's like, okay, no, we actually had to make this much music. And I have to say, I really like it. I usually don't think that I like the 12-inch remix better than the song, but no, I really thought in this case it was great.
I think they did remix 12 inches for Undercover, Too Much Blood, and maybe Feel On Baby, if I remember right. And I think we might have covered that on that episode, which were common at the time, probably still common to some extent now. I remember Undercover, we talked about this, I think, before, that Keith had a version. He said, like, well, I want to do this version or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was later, he's kind of said, like, he didn't like the song at all. At this interview that I came across, I think it was in Musician, he's like, well, I love it, but it's this version, this other version that I want to do that is, Mick has a version that's too conservative for me. So I wonder how much of that 12-inch version, we had a Keith version, would it have been something like that?
This is something, well, yeah. Is there more of this hidden in the vault that we could be hearing?
Yeah, there's a lot of different, like, outtake versions of this that you can find on YouTube. Some of them are a little bit more, like, acoustic-based. Some of them a little bit more, mixed vocals are a little bit differently. Some have, you know, they're built a little bit structurally different. The drums are different, things like that. I think the final one is my favorite version of all the ones I've heard. I've heard of these acoustic versions. I've heard these other ones. I don't think it... I think the one they picked was really the best. I know Ron Wood had said that he thought the acoustic version that him and Mick and Charlie worked on was like, well, that's the one I think we should have went with. But, you know, it's Mick's song, so we have to go with.
We're going to talk about the cover.
The cover is, I looked this up, is there was an art director and an artist or a photographer. I hope I get these names right. Peter Coriston and Hubert Kretschmar. And Hubert Kretschmar, I guess, also did the Tattoo You cover.
Nice.
So the cover, for those who haven't checked it out in all these episodes, is a woman's figure, a female figure, no head. And is it like neck to knees?
Is it like a Venus de Milo and there's little cards placed over, you know, with yes, words telling you, like, this is...
It's a very pale woman, a very blue background. The version I had as a kid, like, there were stickers. Mm. And you could take the stickers off. And I don't remember if she was nude underneath or whatnot, but there's a very small strip, almost like a cartoon, that's got the five stones in it. Mm. And I've got a poster of this somewhere.
I was going to say, that's the t-shirt that needs to come out next.
It's a really cool artist rendition of it. Most of them look like who they're depicting. I think Bill Wyman's was the only one that is kind of strange. We're guessing, but I don't know why we're guessing when we have this in front of us. Yes, but
okay.
Well, now we have it in front of us. So we've got...
So the stickers, of course, covering up all the full frontal nudity of this figure.
Yeah, so this is a female form, or, you know... I'm assuming it was at the time.
Well, we don't actually know.
We don't really know.
It's a great place.
Yeah, this could have been anything, but...
That's kind of a retro burlesque look.
The woman, or person, has very red lipstick, very black hair, very white pale skin, some sort of what looks to be a bracelet, some very long fingernails. She's leaning back on a red or maybe burgundy stool.
Satin-covered something. Yeah.
And the background looks like blue satin. Almost like a turquoise. There's a triangle that sort of looks like snakeskin covering the genital region.
That's completely unexplicit, but you just made that sound so seedy.
It sounded... I mean, there's no way for those words not to be placed in an order that sounds seedy.
It's a snakeskin fig leaf, but you made it sound dirty.
There's a TV. There's a square with what looks to be a TV with the Rolling Stones' tongue coming out of it. There is a circle in the corner toward the bottom right corner with the Rolling Stones tongue. There is a spider web and a spider being sprayed with repellent that says Undercover on it. Top right corner has some sort of colorful collage of, I don't know what that's supposed to be. And then I guess
it looks like a Jackson Pollock painting.
And I guess there are two stickers, at least on this version I'm holding, that show the stones on there. It seems to be the same artwork for both. I think Charlie, Ronnie, Mick, and Keith look very much like themselves. I think Bill, I don't know, he looks like he's in the Stray Cats or...
I was going to say REO Speedwagon, but...
Yeah, he doesn't look like
there's
Bill Wyman.
There's some 80s hair.
He's got some, like, puffy 80s hair. There's one, and this is the poster I have somewhere. It's yellow, I guess you'd call that, like...
Hot pink.
It's a really cool thing. There's a similar one with the same five guys down toward the bottom, and it's a lot of different colors, like a navy blue almost. There's some orange... Some different colors in the background.
What about the back?
Yes, the back.
Besides the track list, essentially has an ass on it.
Yes.
This was a big production back in 1983. Oh no! There's a covered up naked person and their butts on the back. And, you know, to walk into a record store back then and see, you know, they would have like a huge wall display maybe at your local Harmony House or something of all of this and this artwork. You know, if you were just a normal person, you'd be like, oh, look, it's the Stones, those naughty guys. What are they up to now? And some people found this scandalous on a record plagued with scandal.
When was the Tipper Gore hearings or whatever?
Well, not until after Purple Rain, because they bought their daughter, Darling Nikki, and didn't know what it was.
So this wasn't one on the list. One other last thing I've noticed about the cover is, and I think this maybe starts with Tattoo You, is that there's this era where it's just Rolling Stones and not The Rolling Stones.
I never noticed that before.
I just looked at my Tattoo You from the box set, and on that version as well, it says Rolling Stones. I don't know if that was an American thing. I don't know how consistent this is with different covers. I always prefer The. I think in the Commitments, they say all great bands are The something. Doesn't really say on the back either. But I don't know if that was some sort of marketing thing, if that was, hey, we want to try to present ourselves a different way. I think by the time of Steel Wheels, and maybe I'm wrong on this too, but I think eventually it goes back to being The. I don't know. We may be splitting hairs on this, but...
But that's significant and strange. I've never noticed that.
There's a train of thought out there from Stones fans. Okay, let's take it back even one for them. Casual classic rock fan. To most of them, the Stones really end at Tattoo You with Start Me Up. Maybe even before that, but most of the time I think they'll give you to that tour.
You mean like people who like the Eagles and say they like the Rolling Stones too?
Yeah, it's pretty common. Okay, so this is, by the time they get to this one, this is the
you can't see this in podcast land. I am making a face. But some of you know that face.
And I think even rock critics, as they are, I think even a lot of them are like, well, their last great album was this or whatever. So, you know, this is where it starts to diverge. Now, there's another train of thought that says, no, this maybe it wasn't as successful, but this is really the last of the classic band. Because when we're going to get to Dirty Work eventually, but by the time we get to Dirty Work, Mick's going off on his solo endeavors. He's not heavily involved with the album.
I like the way you said endeavors.
Charlie is having his own issues, so he's not as involved with Dirty Work. Wyman's like trying to get out the door and go to lunch or whatever. Like he's not as involved in the record. You know, Wyman's already by 81 is talking about like, hey, I think I'm retiring soon. So Dirty Work is largely made by Keith, Ronnie, and a host of, you know, maybe Steve Jordan pops in, Chuck Lavelle, people in the studio. So there's a train of thought that for its faults, for the fact that maybe it wasn't as successful commercially, whatever you want to say, and we've talked about why those can be discounted. This is like the last Rolling Stones album of the classic era, because by the time they get back to Steel Wheels, they've really gone a different route, and they're like, listen, we're professional now, we show up on time, we're still the greatest, but we're doing this a different way. The danger...
You're saying there's
less chaos? Less chaos.
After this album?
Less, you know, how controversial was Dirty Work? Not very.
Oh.
How controversial was, and not that they're necessarily trying to be controversial, but there's no controversy around Steel Wheels or Voodoo Lounge or anything like that. I don't think it needs it, and I think they just prove like, well, we don't need that to be the greatest rock and roll band. Someone else needs controversy to sell records.
That's heavy. I have to think about this a second.
But this is the last one. We've talked about how controversial this record was. The videos are banned, the lyrics.
On every level.
We just talked about how the album cover, people have to put stickers on it.
Everything they did, people were like, oh.
Yes. I mean, it's scary stuff. And it was scary to people in 1983. Maybe too scary to like be successful on the charts. But by the time they come back, I mean, Dirty Work, you could say, is... What are your thoughts?
Okay, let me see. These fair weather Stones fans who don't get it that they were like as big now, this year in 2021. They're still having hits. They're still putting out hit albums. They're still putting out great music. You know, I have a lot of things, of course, to say about those Beggar's Banquet people who are just like, well, they're Stones after the 60s. Like, it's because you were stuck in the 60s and wish you could crawl back there. My God. Discover, well, anyway... But the thing is, here in 1983, the Stones are still innovators. They're still making music that had an impact. And that's amazing and great. And so whatever your thoughts are, like here they're proving it, that they're still a creative force. They're still dangerous. They're still stretching out. And whatever they do, it's like, wow, okay, I wouldn't have thought to do that. If you would have just made Start Me Up 10 more times, someone else would have been totally satisfied. I think something else we can say for sure Mick's attempts at being au courant really dates this into the 80s. Every time he's taking a stand to try to be modern, you know, like, oh, could you do an Andy Summers guitar riff? That okay, that's cringe now.
Yeah.
So we have to say it. Keith was right. Oh, there it is.
Yes. You know, the arguments made like that maybe this is largely a Mick Jagger album in a lot of ways, because Undercover is sort of the thrust of the album. A lot of this controversies around the lyrics, around the videos he puts together, things like that. So when this isn't very as successful maybe as it's been, and he already knows at this point he's making a solo album. He's already kind of got this provision and he's going to do it. We'll get into this.
That's going to have great, great
repercussions.
Yeah, on Dirty Work. But right now on this album, some places the sonics on this album are startling. Yeah. I mean, they have a resonance, you know, I mean, you really hear your speakers cooking and trembling with this. It sounds modern today. And really, you know, they made an album that was way better than they had to.
Yeah.
And if we look at, like, what was Bowie doing in 83? He was starting that creepy period that my sister likes where, you know, granted he was filling stadiums and whatever, but he was thinking about quitting music and painting because he hated his commercial.
It's a good
bland
point.
Bowie.
It's a good point. I wonder if, so you'd called this out many years ago, and I think we were talking about Emotional Rescue or something, and you were saying that's going to be, as much as it's, you know, critics don't dig it or didn't dig it, that's going to be the one that people start going back to that era and saying, this was a golden era, and it's happened. And we've seen it happen. So I wonder if when the time of it inevitably comes, when this gets revisited on a bigger scale, if what they're going to look at is the lyrics, the controversy, but also the point you just made is the sound. I think there's sounds on here like that guitar solo you mentioned, I think in, I think it was Must Be Hell. There's other things they do in Feel On Baby and stuff like that. I mean, they weren't there before. I don't know that they really went back to that again. I think someone will go back to this later and be like, wow, this sound-wise, this was something that they kind of stumbled on, maybe.
The Chris Kimsey era can't be beat.
It can't be. He's the unsung hero.
Something. How old were they? How old were the lads when this came out?
Mick is probably right. Mick and Keith are right around 40. Ron Wood's slightly younger.
Okay.
Charlie Watts slightly older. And then, so Bill Wyman's probably like 45 or something.
You know, if we're saying they're this old and they're making this dangerous, messy, impactful album, like, what are Green Day doing now that they're old?
Right.
You know, like what are those, the people who are supposed to be the replacements have done? You know, what's Metallica doing in their old age? You know, are they doing anything as good as this or as interesting as Undercover? And then the Stones would just go from this, from like, to me, strength to strength. I mean, my favorite album is still like more than a decade away.
Yeah, so they wrap this up. They get this, they do the release. The album comes out. The singles come out. Mick does a solo song with Michael Jackson. Test the Waters, I think, a little bit, which was actually State of Shock, which was actually going to be Michael and Freddie Mercury.
Right. So they say to Michael Jackson, and whose troubles with the law don't need elaborating here. Hey, you know, that Freddie Mercury, he's kind of sleazy. Maybe you should get someone clean cut like Mick Jagger to do this song.
It's a top 10 hit, and Mick, I think, takes this as a sign like, well, okay, I'm right about my theory about solo success.
We'll delve.
That's a separate thing. I think,
I mean, we can chortle with the benefit of hindsight. In 1983, it might have looked different.
I think this album, in the Stones canon, we've kind of proven our point here that it's in many ways a forgotten album, but it's also one that people need to revisit. They should revisit.
The rewards are great.
Yes, I think that's the best way to say it. The rewards, more wealth than you can imagine.
And I can imagine
quite a bit. Well, that concludes this season of Hard Labor and Money Splashes.
Huzzah!
We don't know exactly what the next season will be. Well, maybe we do, and we're not going to say.
We're not going to say.
We could say. Well, I think the next season...
This is my dream, but you guys could probably get in touch with us via the Instagram or something. Like, you know, why don't you talk about this? I think, well, we got Goat's Head Soup, Dirty Work.
Yes.
Then I think we'd take a swerve into like an introduction to the 60s Stones and do something. Iconic 60s.
We'll put some sort of poll up and the listeners can tell us what they want us to do in upcoming seasons.
Yeah.
But stay tuned for our next season, which will begin shortly. moments from now, depending on when you're listening
to this.
In
5 minutes.
Yes.
But Andy Warhol, he always said, I didn't say in the future everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. I said, everyone will be famous in the future. And someone said, well, when? He's like, in 15 minutes.
So there you go. Come back in half past.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Hard Labor and Money Splashes, the podcast dedicated to the world's greatest rock and roll band, the Rolling Stones. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Email us at hardlabormoneysplashes@gmail.com.